May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord. Back to our rules. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, says the fourth commandment. And those two readings from Isaiah and from Luke's Gospel have got a focus within them on the Sabbath. One commentator says to us, Sabbath is a day for rest and renewal. And the rather negative view we take towards the various restrictions associated with the Sabbath would have been very foreign to the Israelites. And he's thinking of the Israelites in the ancient days. He reminds us that the law, the rules, including laws about the Sabbath, were given to the people of Israel after their exodus from Egypt. Egypt, remember, where they were slaves, working however their masters commanded them, probably never getting any time off, working until they were exhausted. And so when the people are given a command to rest, to set aside one day of the week, to rest their bodies and their livestock, and to retreat for a time of prayer and renewal, this would have been good news. So the Sabbath wasn't meant to be restrictive, but a benefit, to bring a rhythm to life of work and rest. So that's the origination, and perhaps we might think that in our lives today we've lost that as Sunday becomes like any other day. I'm not going to focus on that, but it's a fact. The passage from Isaiah dates from the time after the Babylonian exile, when the people had returned home from Babylon. Your ancient ruin shall be rebuilt. You shall rise up the foundation of many generations. It's almost a backdrop to the gospel story, because there's two parts. The early verses are about how we treat others. The later ones about relationship with God. In those early verses, there's a do and a don't. The people are to remove the yoke, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil. In other words, don't judge, don't speak evil of other people. And they're to care for the needy. If you offer your food to the hungry, satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness. The Lord will guide you continually. So that's all about relationships with others. Don't judge others. Do look after those in need. Then there is the injunction to observe the Sabbath. During the exile, the Sabbath had become important, a sign of the people's covenant with God, as they tried to hold on to their identity as God's people. If you refrain from trampling the Sabbath, from pursuing your own interests on that holy day, if you honour it, then you shall take delight in the Lord. So in that reading, there's this familiar dual aspect of Jewish faith. Love of God, shown in honouring the Sabbath, and love of neighbour. Those two aspects which Jesus emphasises. What are the two most important commandments? Love God and love your neighbour. And in the gospel story, it's the Sabbath day. And Jesus is there at the synagogue, and he's teaching. But he allows his teaching to be interrupted by the sight of the crippled woman. Earlier on in Luke's gospel, in chapter 6, we read about Jesus healing a man with a withered hand, also on the Sabbath. On both occasions, we're told that Jesus is teaching. We're not given any details of his teaching, but it's interesting to notice that those who object don't object to what Jesus is saying, to his teaching, but to his actions, to the healings, which they see as breaking the Sabbath. We might ask ourselves whether Jesus is being deliberately provocative. After all, it says that the woman had been ill for a very long time, 18 years, was it? So it's clearly not an emergency. Logically, Jesus could have come along and healed her the next day, as the synagogue leader points out, and avoided the confrontation. I suspect, though, that Jesus' immediate reaction is of the heart. His response is one of compassion. He doesn't think about the legalities of Sabbath observance or the way that others will react to his action. He sees someone in need of healing and he responds, "I have come to bring life," as he says elsewhere. Here is someone whose life is stunted because of her disability, and Jesus immediately acts to restore her. We're not told the woman's name. She is a woman with a spirit that had crippled her for 18 years. She's defined by her condition, and that condition puts her on the margins of society. She may well have been a beggar, unable to look after herself and her family. And Jesus restores her to wholeness, not just the physical healing, but to a full life within her community. And when challenged about healing on the Sabbath, Jesus brings people back to the meaning and the purpose of the Sabbath. It was meant as a benefit, not as a reaction, not as a restriction. Would not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, be set free from her bondage on the Sabbath day? The Sabbath had been given as a blessing to freed slaves. Here was this woman imprisoned by her illness and disability. She too deserved freedom. And we can recall perhaps Jesus' response to the Pharisees on that other occasion, the healing of the man with the withered hand. Is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save life or to destroy it? Jesus, I suggest, doesn't deliberately set out to cause controversy. But when asked to justify his actions, he challenges and provokes. "You feed your animals, isn't that work?" He's encouraging people to understand what the message that God has given to them is all about, what the religious observance is all about, what's important. Not denying the law, not setting it aside, but offering an interpretation based on God's grace. The story focuses on the woman. But there were many people in the society that were marginalised by their jobs. Shepherds, farmers, fishermen, who were providing food for others but had to work on the Sabbath. And they too could be excluded. And Jesus reaches out to them. So we might say, well, what place rules and regulations in our own lives, in our own society? The law was meant to be something positive, something which God gave to the people to help them live in community, to help them relate to him. And we know that rules and regulations are important. I've mentioned sport, which wouldn't work without rules. But there's so much else that wouldn't work without rules. Driving is perhaps one that we might think of. We each decided on our own which side of the road we might drive on. We'd soon have a problem. And we can be a bit scathing about health and safety. But we know that rules and laws are for our safety and to protect us, and perhaps particularly to safeguard those more vulnerable members of society. They enable us to live together in community. Jesus knew this. That was the purpose of the Jewish law. But he also realised that rules sometimes limit rather than enhance life, and sometimes need to be challenged rather than accepted unquestioningly. Those who were in leadership, the synagogue leader, the Pharisees, saw their duty as protecting the rules, the status quo. Begin to seem to bend the rules and anything might happen is always the fear. It's not just a fear of those people in the past. Sometimes it needs a fresh look, a new vision. Jesus comes with a different perspective to get at what's important. In our own day, I'm sure we've all been interested in hearing about how Pope Francis has seemed in some ways to be rewriting the rules about what's expected from the Pope, ringing people up like a teenage boy who had written to him, refusing to live in a palatial apartment, engaging with the poorest, trying to reassert what's important, humility and humanity, trying to mirror the attitudes of Christ. It'll be interesting to see how far he wants to and is able to take this forward in challenging some of the attitudes in the Vatican establishment. The Gospel story makes us think again about the role and the purpose of our religious traditions, and all traditions have them, it's not just the Vatican and popes. About what is God-given? And what's only custom and practice, and we do it because that's how we do it here, and we've always done it like that. Are the things that we do in our United Reformed Church as a whole, in our churches here in Wheatley in Oxford, which unintentionally exclude people? And if you remember the Radical Welcome campaign that was being promoted some years ago, it didn't work out, but it was trying to address this, wanting us to welcome people on the margins, but somehow it didn't speak to us in the churches. Was it too radical? Was Jesus too radical? Our churches try to be open and welcoming, and we succeed when people come through the door. What about those who don't come? What puts people off? Perhaps it's not so much rules, but the perception of rules, of a way of doing things with which people are unfamiliar, which makes them uncomfortable. Of the way the church sometimes talks about issues in society in a different way from others. That's not to say we shouldn't, but how do we get across why we're saying things in this way? It's not all negative. Some of the churches in the Somerton area have been holding worship services in the two community centres, one on either side of the main road. One aimed at young families, one aimed at older people. Having a service where, which is in the community, in a building which isn't threatening, as it were, which people are familiar with and coming to, drawing in people who don't normally come to church. Here in Wheatley, in the short time I've been involved, I've noticed how much the churches are very much part of the village community. I'm going to do a little bit of helping next week at the Holiday Club for children and young people. Lots of fun, but also Bible-based. Drawing in youngsters who wouldn't otherwise experience the Christian faith. But nonetheless, there is a challenge to us, I think. Luke's Jesus operates well within his tradition, but he doesn't allow that tradition to exclude people from all people from access to the community. He allows them to be healed, and many in the crowd agree. It's a story about community, about inclusion, about thinking about what we do, what we say, how we do it, and about asking ourselves what kind of community do we want to be. How much do our traditions help us to become that kind of community? Or will they hinder a daughter of Abraham in our day from joining us today? So lots of challenges there, I think, not just about the Sabbath, but about ourselves as community, and as we look together at our Oxford churches, perhaps it's things to bear in mind. Thanks be to God.